wasn't it? Beautiful chat. Tonight we happen to have spoken about in the Musar that when a person takes a small step towards doing something that in many ways defines what they are, what their priorities are, and what their shi'ifos are, what their aspirations are. So that phenomenon is I think what's taking place, us learning together tonight as well. And that is that we're making a statement. We're making a statement that even if we don't get anything out of this, even if there's, even if you come away and you have a different take, which is totally fine, or there are things that we didn't discuss that are important, or whatever it might be, or you're so tired and you're so exhausted at the end of the week, it's totally fine if you have to fall asleep. The fact that you're making a statement to yourself that the kolo is also about the mechanic, the next generation, and that at the end of the day there's an understanding that chinuch isn't something that is a train that you just jump on and it moves automatically. Yeah, it's going to move automatically. God willing, our children become 1 year old and 2 years old, and I could tell you that my oldest is 20. It happens in a blink of an eye. It happens really, 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 really quickly. And that's why it's never too early to start thinking about things. Never too early. And the moment in which one makes that statement that, wait a second, this is something that really requires thought and attention. And frankly, and Talmidim are sitting next to me know that I love Iyun and I know love Halacha and so on. But frankly, the most important thing for us to discuss in the Kol of the Shon Bayis and Chinuch. It's really the most important thing. With that, we're going to be our children, if we aspire for them to become great Talmid HaChacham, can become great Talmid HaChacham, and our daughters to become fantastic Benos Chayil. But at the end of the day, if we don't have that, then all the learning and everything else that we're doing that's so important, both for Klal Yisrael and for our own Ruchnias, is, God forbid, won't continue. To accentuate that point, I want to emphasize that, if you take a look at the second page, the word chinuch is, Rashi makes a big deal about it when it comes to Avraham Avinu, when he saddles his donkeys to go and fight the 4 and 5 kings. It says, Vayorekes chanichah. Vayorek meaning to be mezareis, Rashi tells us. Chanichah, Rashi gives two explanations. Rashi says, is on the second page, we have a little bit of an underline there, Chanichah, chanafoksi, ze Eliezer, shechinech l'mitzvos. That it's reference to Eliezer, who is mechanic for mitzvos. V'hu lashan haschalas knisas ha'adam, o kli l'umnos, shu asid la'modva. Rashi tells us that the definition of chinuch is to prepare, to ready for mitzvot. Like the pasuk says, Chanuch l'nar, chanukas ha'mizbeach. In other words, our tafkid as being mechanic, our children, if we're going to define what the word chinuch is, and this is quite important. Chinuch does not mean to educate. That wouldn't be the correct translation of the word chinuch. It doesn't mean to educate, but rather what chinuch means is to prepare for life. There's a big difference between educating. In other words, my job is to educate Rav Yehuda in Hilchos Shabbos. That's to educate him. That's what the course in Hilchos Shabbos is about, is to give off information. But that's not what chinuch is about. Chinuch is not about training or educating. Chinuch is about creating appropriate preparation for life. That's what Rashi says over here. Again, look back at Rashi. V'hu lashan haschalas knisas ha'adam. It's bringing an individual, or lahavdil kli umnos, to prepare it for its role. And then Rashi gives the example, chanukas ha'mizbeach. Chanukas ha'mizbeach means to inaugurate the mizbeach so that it's ra'ui, that it is appropriate for its purpose, what its purpose is supposed to be. So we're preparing, and this is a very, very, very important point, subtle, but I think very, very profound. And that is what we're doing when we're being mechanic our children is preparing them. Notice I'm not using any religious words. It's to prepare them for life. Prepare them for life. And not necessarily is educating always about preparing. There are other things that go into Rav Yehuda's Shmir Shabbos that are above and beyond whether he knows the Taz from today or he doesn't know the Taz from today. Preparation is much deeper than that. Chinuch is much more profound than that. It's not about giving information, but it's about preparation, preparing for life. On the first page, if you take a look, Chanukas, HaMizbeach, that Rashi made reference to, in Parshas Naso, is referred to in a different way. If you take a look in Perek Zayin, Pasuk Aleph, there, that same Chinuch, that Chanukas HaMizbeach, is referred to as Kedusha. It's referred to as sanctifying. But the word to sanctify, you all know, the word Kedusha is not simply holiness, but Kedusha is about separation or designation. It's being able to designate, to raise up a child, to be able to be the best that they could be, obviously from our perspective, to be the best Odei Hashem. That's what Chinuch is about. And a lot of times, we get caught in a trap where we look at Chinuch, we use Chinuch to describe schools, we use Chinuch to describe many things that are educationally oriented, and Chinuch is much more subtle than that. Now, with that introduction to the word of Chinuch, I want to say that I'm quite sure and confident that most of the things that I'm going to say to you in the next few weeks that result that weren't with each other are things that you already know. And here, of course, the words of Mesillas Yesharim are so, so important, and the words that emphasize that the things that Dvarim Pshutim, Hadvarim Pshutim, Tzrichim, the things that are obvious, those are the things that need the most chizuk. Because very well, he'll make subtle points to redefine what the word chinuch is. But what we're coming here is to be mechazik each other. That's what we're here for. Being mechazik each other to remind ourselves what the yisodos are. With that being said, I'm not here to educate. I'm here to be mechanic. I'm here for us to grow together, and that means for your preparedness, for being the best parents that Be'ezar Hashem you could be, what's on your mind is also extremely important. And therefore, if there are particular issues that you want me to discuss, or there's something that you feel requires elaboration, or you think that there's something that maybe requires a different way of looking at it, to share as a group, it doesn't have to be a lecture. Most definitely, if there are ha'aros and things that you want to share as we move along, that's extremely important. That's our goal. Our goal is to be mechanech ourselves for chinuch based on the above definitions that we said. Which brings us to our next page. There's one sefer, unlike Shalom Bayis, that our zelka to do with the men. What we're going to do for chinuch habanim is something that's very, very different. In Shalom Bayis, sort of in talking with couples, sort of came up with a basic curriculum of the 5-6 important topics I think were appropriate to talk about. Here, I'm going to be relying on one sefer, and that sefer was a world changer in the Torah world of chinuch, and that is Rav Volbi's sefer, Azriya Ubinyan B'chinuch. That sefer is absolutely important. It's interesting, of course, it's been translated into English. What's the title in English?
Planting and Building.
And you could get it in English. Interestingly, it was censored. There are a couple pieces that, and we'll even, I think in some later booklets, we'll have it photocopied. There are a couple of things that were changed to be more politically correct. There are a couple of things that are surprising that Rivoldi said and wrote that were taken out of the English edition. But at the end of the day, leaving those pieces aside, what Rivoldi did is absolutely mind-boggling. And he did exactly what I mentioned that our goal would be, is to go over the basics. For sure there'll be chidushim, but to go over the basics of ein machzikin el muchzakin, to go over the basic yisodos, which will be absolutely so important in terms of preparing ourselves. It's well known that Revolvi spoke about the difference between smicha ubinyan. And what I'm going to do is every week we're going to have a small keta, sometimes two or three pages, sometimes less than that, sometimes more, of Revolvi's piece. Obviously, we're not going to be learning the sefer. I'm going to use it as a springboard to talk about issues, but I highly recommend that you, every once in a while, read over the sefer if there's something you want to sit down and do some simple reading. What Revolvi did was amazing. What he describes, of course, in Chinuch, as the title emphasizes, is that there are two phenomena in which an entity begins to expand and grow. And they are binyan and netiyah, building or planting. And he points out that we have those different lashonos in tefillah. If you take a look at, on page tes, he points out that b'tefillah amida anu mevarchin shtei brachos b'nei Yerushalayim. One is bonei Yerushalayim, v'ashniya Hashem matzmiach et haMashiach, and the second is smicha. And what Revolvi develops is the idea that both building and planting, we're going to define what those things mean. Both building and planting are absolutely critical in chinuch. Both of them are central. Of course, as many of you anticipate, the planting part is more central. The planting part is more critical. And he describes what is tzmicha. Tzmicha hi talich tivi b'olam hazeh. That is the natural order. That which is planted in the ground grows by itself. Eitz tzomech me'alav. A tree grows by itself. Binyan, hudavar sha'adam osa. Binyan is something that is made. Miniach yisod, you create a foundation. Va'afekach miniach nidbach al gabi nidbach ad shahabayit muchan. You place one brick on top of the next, and that is how a edifice is built. What Revolvi is going to emphasize is that even though, well, you know what, let's define it right now. What exactly does Zriya mean for Chinuch, and what exactly is Binyan for Chinuch? Zriya is when you encourage a child to grow into his or her potential. That's what Zriya is. Binyan is when you do something that is more invasive, sometimes very positive, sometimes absolutely necessary, but invasive, in which you affect the edifice that is being built. And if you will, your child is both an edifice, is both a building, as well as a zriya, or, to put it in other terms, it's a confluence of both. What you're acting upon your child is both going to be binyan and zriya. What is more organic, what is more natural, what is more critical in a child's growth, is that which comes from inside of themselves. Just think about two different rabbeim that you had. One rebbe gave you a lot of information, and he was a fantastic teacher in conveying information. And then you had another rebbe who has what's the term that used today, taught you how to learn. The famous expression that's what's more significant is to teach someone to be able to fish than to actually give them the fish themselves. That's the difference, if you would oversimplify, the difference between Zriya and Binyan. Binyan is when you're taking something and you're adding it to the child. It could be something positive, or taking something away. What's the obvious example of that? The obvious example of that is reward and punishment. You're superimposing onto the child positive or negative reinforcement in order that they grow in a particular direction. That is not Zriya. Even though it's going to affect how they're going to act, Zriya is where you create a situation where the child themselves organically comes to a particular place. Now, is there a place for punishment? Absolutely. And for those of you who already have kids who are 2 or 3 years old, the common question is, so how do I respond when my child hits someone in the playground, etc., etc. What am I supposed to do? Is it appropriate to punish? When am I supposed to punish? How do I punish? Etc., etc. Those are all critical questions, and those things we'll try to tackle together. But that is not the pristine component of chinuch. The pristine component of chinuch is ria, not binyan. And that's where Revolvi changed in the mindset of many, many people. It's something that's so beautiful. It's something that's organic. It looks at a child as someone that's growing into an entity on its own, and our responsibility is to create the right environment around them. Much less invasive, much more natural, much more organic, where it comes from the child, him or herself. Now, I'm into punishments when necessary, and I'm into reward when necessary as well. But at the end of the day, those components are only secondary, Revolvi wants to argue, in regards to Zriya. So let's go to the metaphor. Let's go right away to what exactly the metaphor then of Zriya would be. The metaphor of Zriya then has, let's try to figure it out together. What do you need for a plant? What are the necessary components?
Sun.
Sun.
Water.
Seeds.
Soil.
That's it. That's all you need. The seed, Baruch Hashem, the child's Baruch Hashem been born, Mazel Tov. Mm-hmm. And now, so that's already taken care of. Now the question is, what is the soil? What is the sun? And what is the
water.
The water for us could be Torah. Torah is Mimshal Kamayim. And that, Emir Tzeshem, you'll give to your children, and hopefully you'll send them to good yeshivas and good Beis Yaakovs, and they'll get it from there. But actually, the most nuanced part is their exposure to sun and the soil. The sun, Lanias Daiti, as a metaphor, this is not Torah Misinai. This is just a way of developing our idea. The sun is the warmth and the love that you give your children. And soil is everything else that goes into the way in which they process the Torah, that's Nimshal Kamayim, everything else that that gives them the support that's necessary for them to stand, that's going to be the soil. There is a fantastic book that is written by, and I'm going to make reference to this book all the time, and she's written many, many books. It's the book that I use often. I would highly recommend it if you could get it. For that matter, if you get anything that she's written, you know, there's some authors that everything they write is gold. An example of that is Rabbi Twersky. Everything that Rabbi A.J. Twersky writes is gold. There's no bad Rabbi Twersky book. The question is whether he wrote in one day or 2 days. That's the only nafkamina. But otherwise, everything Rabbi Twersky writes is gold. There's another person that's like that, and she's a psychologist, who's a Frum psychologist, who markets her work to the general secular audience. And that's Sarah Hannah Radcliffe. I highly recommend her writing. She's a psychologist in Toronto. She hit the big stage in the Torah world last year, because I think she was one of the first women psychologists to present at Aguda convention. So if you want to know if she's kosher from Aguda perspective, she markets to a secular audience, which is absolutely fascinating. In fact, I didn't know, the only way I knew that she was religious is from her name. Her name is Sarah Hannah Radcliffe. She never anglicized her name. And the book that we're going to be quoting a lot from is How to Educate Without Raising Your Voice, or something like that. How to Parent Without Raising Your Voice. The book has just pictures of many different kids from many different cultural backgrounds. Indian, black, white, etc., etc. There's no sign at all that she's from. And she says the punchline on page number 5 when she describes the parenting philosophy. And she says, The most important focus in parenting is on strengthening the warm feelings between parents and child. In other words, coming back to the Zriya model, at the end of the day, that sun that you're able to project to your children is going to be the most important thing. The sun can't control always whether it's going to rain or not, but the warmth that you give to your child is absolutely important. Now, this brings us to something that is absolutely critical in parenting. And I'm about to make you, this has all been very nice, these are basic Yesodos, many of you are familiar with Zriya and Binyan. I have to warn you, I'm going to make you a little bit uncomfortable now. I'll tell you, I was very uncomfortable. I've asked parents or soon to be parents, Mirtz Hashem parents, how this made them feel, and they said this makes them feel a little bit uncomfortable. And that is, we mentioned that you're not always in control. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was in control. A parent whose focus is on binyan, which is important, but obsesses on binyan, thinks that they could build a child, that they can make a child be a certain way. But it's not true. There are things that parents can do, and there are things that parents cannot do. And one of the hardest parts about being a healthy parent is recognizing that there are things that we cannot do in parenting. All right, you ready to feel uncomfortable? Let's begin on the bottom, number 5. What you can do in parenting. You can treat your children with respect even when you're stressed. You can react gently and patiently to their mistakes. You can show them affection with hugs, gifts, caring, and loving words. You can attend compassionately to their feelings, giving them emotional support. I'm going to skip some, what you read also on your own. You can expose them to your values and beliefs. Notice that. You can expose them to your values and beliefs. That doesn't necessarily mean that your children are automatically going to take them. And trying to force them through binyan also isn't going to. You can model behaviors. Page 6, you can implement various types of discipline. You can increase your parenting options by continuing studying and learning parenting approaches. My wife told me that she was speaking to someone in the States, and just things have changed. I think Reuben Youngman's mother is one who had an impact on this. But my wife, 20 years ago, when my children were young, maybe a little less, we were already in Israel, was speaking to someone in the States and said she was taking a parenting class. And that person was mortified for taking a parenting class. Because once upon a time, taking a parenting class was a concession that you don't know how to parent on your own. Baruch Hashem, that's changed. But you'll be amazed, 20 years ago, Mishpacha magazine didn't exist. No, 20, 25 years ago, people weren't talking openly about parenting. People weren't writing articles about parenting or about chinuch. When I grew up, there was no such thing as a parenting class. Part of the reason is because we had much stronger Masora. But there were people that were mortified 15, 20 years ago about the idea of taking parenting classes. Isn't it mind-boggling that in Grus, there wasn't Shalom Bayis and Chinuch Habanim for 30 years? Isn't that mind-boggling? The young parents and animals came out great. You know? So the his wife came out fantastic. The point is that once upon a time, somehow it worked. Without it, the system worked. Things have changed a lot. Things have changed a lot in the system since then, and there are many more challenges. But that's amazing. That's beautiful, Rabosai. Take a look at this again. Number 6, you can increase your parenting options by continually studying and learning parenting approaches. No, it's not just what automatically you learn from your parents. Even if your parents were fantastic, you yourself are growing with them. You can provide them with opportunities to develop their interests, skills, and talents. You can take care of yourself and reduce your stress, enabling you to be more relaxed, healthy parent. That's really, really, of course, important that we should spend more time talking about. I don't, maybe you'll remind me at the end. And Rabosai, then we get to probably the most important thing in chinuch. And Lamias Daiti, Rabobi, Zatzal missed something. What's the most important factor in chinuch habanim? Anybody want to go for it? It's actually later on the page. Yefe mod. I was thinking of the world of ashtadlus, but 100%. 100%, I'm going to get back to that. My wife always gives me musar about that. We'll get back to that. But what, in the world of ashtadlus? Role model, the most important piece. Role models are extremely important. The shalom bayis. It's the reason why we do shalom bayis before chinuch habanim. The most important factor in chinuch habanim, l'aniyas da'iti, is shalom bayis. The more you work on your marriage to be the best that it could be, it's not going to be perfect, because you're not perfect, and I'm not perfect, my wife's not perfect. But the more and more you work on your shalom bayis, the more positively your children will grow up. All studies support this idea. There's no doubt about it. There's no doubt about it. So therefore, we have to start shalom bayis all over again. Therefore, it's absolutely critical that one works on this. Why did I say this is going to make you uncomfortable? Because it's the next part. What you can't do in parenting. As you see, there are many things you can't accomplish. And a shudder goes down my spine when I read this. I find this almost close to painful. You can't ensure that your children will be happy. You can't ensure that your children will be mentally well. You can't ensure that your children will be physically well. You can't ensure that your children will succeed in school. You can't ensure that your children will have a large circle of friends. You can't ensure that your children will have a desirable career. You can't ensure that your children will get married or stay married. You can't ensure that your children will get along with their siblings. You can't ensure that your children will be whole all of your views. So I jotted in over here as Sarah Hannah Radcliffe goes on. But that's why planting is so important. Because planting recognizes, it builds into the system the notion that you are not going to build your child. That you don't have absolute control. When you build something, you have absolute control on how it's going to look. You're either a good builder or a bad builder. If you're a good builder, so then you could, everything is under your control. Like we say in the Rosh Hashanah Piyut, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fashions everything, but you and I are not God. There's HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's going to be in the equation. And that brings us to the beautiful point that Chaim made, is that the last part of the equation, whenever I would prepare the shir before my wife would say, Chaim always tells them that the most critical part is tefillah. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the end of the day, is the one who's going to give us the siyata d'shmaya in this endeavor. But we realize how the two go together. It's not just stam siyata d'shmaya. A person who really understands that there's siyata d'shmaya that's involved recognizes that at the end of the day, the most and the best that they could do is actually zriya and not binyan. Because binyan makes an assumption that we could build everything in our child's life. That's why planting is more important. Commands are something that we do to try to gain control on something that we really, really can't. So that's the omic of Rav Olbi's driving at about the difference between Sriya and Binyan. Rav Olbi gives a classic example going back to what we had previously. If you go back on page Yud Aleph, an example of what Sriya is about preparing yourself properly, says Rav Olbi that there is everything in life, and this is the challenge of Chinuch, and this is the challenge of Zriya. For sure, there are places for Binyan, and for sure we have to analyze Binyan as well. But in regards to Zriya, Rav Olbi points out that Zriya also includes something as nuanced as timing. Timing is absolutely important. In other words, that when a person introduces their child to something, at what stage are they in life in terms of whether they're ready to be introduced to that idea? Here I'll become a little bit no longer politically correct. In my opinion, I was taught Gemara when I was too young. Baruch Hashem, there are no lasting effects. But I think that a lot of kids are introduced to Gemara when they're too young. Rav Olbi gives an example of, if you take a look here, it's on page Yud Aleph. Al derech zu navin et inyan hatzmicha va'binyan b'chinuch yiladeinu. I'll get back to the Gemara shortly.
In Rotzim Shai Yelad Yitzmach Liyudi Halom Eitor Mekayim Mitzvah Tzrichim Lizro Boat Hazer Shal Torah. Hushamru Chazal Katan Hayodeh L'daber.
Notice, Rav Volbe is going to make a big deal about this.
A child that knows how to speak, Aviv Melamdei Torah V'Kriyishma. A father teaches him Torah and Kriyishma. And he quotes a famous Maimar Chazal, Ben Chomesh L'Mikra, Ben Eser L'Mishna, Ben Chamesh Esrei L'Gemara.
Really, he's supposed to start Gemara at age 15. They started Gemara with my son, maybe, well, this year at age 10, the time that he's supposed to be starting Mishnah. What Rav Volbe emphasized, let me get back to the Gemara point for myself, at the end of the day, the Gemara was made for a certain intellectual stage in which a person is at. Now, if I'm going to move into a community and then, even as a Rav, and try to change the whole system, it's just, it has to be done. Most changes take place best through evolution as opposed to revolution. But at the end of the day, Rav Volbe drives at that. What is Zuria is also about introducing to the plant, this small sapling, introducing them to things that are appropriate. God forbid if you take a sapling and you pour more and more water, right? And you could drown it. You could drown it. You could drown it in good stuff. You could drown it in very, very good stuff. So Zuria is also about this bechina of timing. What is the right time? And some of you, it's already on your mind. When do I discipline? When do I teach a child that it's appropriate to, when not? When does a child, when do they reach that cognitive stage in life where they're able to process those phenomena? Volbe is emphasizing over here that that timing is absolutely critical. But there's one thing that we start off with which is not dependent on timing at all. And that is the Dvarim HaPshutim that you all know but requires the emphasis, and that is the unconditional love. But unconditional love is complicated. There's never too much unconditional love. But here's the knitch. Every single person here who's zocha to have a child has an aspiration to give their children unconditional love. And in many ways, there are children who felt that they weren't loved enough or didn't receive enough love from their parents who really, truly, unconditionally loved them. But what happens? What is love? Love is the sun, in the metaphor of Zriya. Zriya, it's not only the responsibility of the farmer to make sure that there's a sun out there, but there is a responsibility for him to make sure that there's nothing blocking the sun. And one of the most painful things in chinuch is when you come, or a miya'etz chinuch, someone who gives advice in regards to chinuch, is when you come across a situation where the parents really wanted to give love to their children, but their children didn't feel the love. The classic tragedy, of course, is, Rav Weinberger Schlita speaks about this all the time, about the wealthy parents who shower their kids with everything they want, and then the child said, "But Dad, I didn't want a new car." And they start crying. "I didn't want a new car. I just wanted time with you. And that's what I really, really wanted." So even if the parent unconditionally loves the child, the reason we're here together to be mechazik each other is to be able to reach the point where we make a cheshbon of how we're going to convey that unconditional love in a way that's going to be received. Rabbi Greenwald, in a nice book called Preparing Your Child for Success, says something absolutely amazing about the Moshe Feinstein. It's in the Italics. One of Moshe Feinstein said that he always knew that his father loved him. Among other things, he says two things here about Ramesha. Among other things, even when he had guests at the table, my father wanted me to sit next to him. In other words, there are things that we have to try to do to make sure that are going to somehow seep in to our child's psyche, where not only do we have unconditional love for them, is to
somehow convey it to them. Now, I want to argue that Rav Moshe did dozens of things for his children to feel unconditional love. But whether this is Rav Reuven, or my guess is that this is Rav Reuven Feinstein, not Rav David Feinstein. Assuming my guess, Rav Reuven Feinstein internalized 2 out of the dozen things that his father did. And the amazing part is once a child gets a couple of them, 2, 3, or 4, then that turns the corner. That turns the corner. That's something where the child finally gets it. The final child finally receives it. So number one is my father always wanted me to sit next to him. You know, there's an expression, we're going to make reference to this all the time. All the time we're going to refer back to this. And that is the successful businessman. They always mention, it's always mentioned that there are many businessmen who, at the end of their life, they said they wish that they had spent less time at the office and more time with their family. And you'll never find somebody who said, Chaval, I spent too much time with my family and didn't spend enough time at the office. That's something that we need to convey to our children. Whatever we're doing, we're mechanchim, communal leaders, rabbanim, involved in so many different things. You see, right now, it sounds very easy. It's like, yeah, it's obvious. Because right now, you're in Kolo. And right now, there aren't many other things that are going on. But in a few short years, Klal Yisrael is going to really, really need you. They're going to really, really need you. And there are going to be a lot of people out there who are going to really, really need you. But at the end of the day, Baruch Shutim, your children always have to come first. And that's what Rav Moshe showed his children when he always put them next to him. His Chacham Avadi was coming to visit, etc., etc. His children were always next to him. That's what Rav Reuven Feinstein says. And then there's something else that's absolutely beautiful. In the winter, he would always put up my socks on the radiator so when I woke up in the mornings, they would be warm. And it would be easy for me to get dressed. That's mind-boggling. That's absolutely mind-boggling. By the way, this is a great example of Shalom Bayis being connected to Chinuch. I usually give the Musar to the guys when their wives are not around, but I'll give Musar to the guys when their wives are around as well. How many of us think of doing those things for our wives? And by the way, those types of musar also do go in both directions. But how many of us really, really think that, think about when we get up in the morning when a day is cold, etc., etc., how many of us think of doing something like that? I know I don't do it enough. Now, here's Rav Moshe Feinstein. By the way, Rav Moshe gave just a little bit of a beautiful history about Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe gave Iyun Shir on a long, long Iyun Shir on Friday mornings. And he would get up. He didn't have time to prepare during the day. By the way, good Magidei Shirim, you know, the best time to prepare for Shir? To get up early in the morning. That's the best time to prepare for Shir when everybody's still asleep. So Rav Moshe would get up at about 4 in the morning, and Rav Moshe would start preparing then. Can you imagine the tension that Rav Moshe was under? He didn't have time the rest of the week to prepare. There were big talmid chacham that would come to shir. Ultimately, this was the Dibros Moshe. Those shirim became Rav Moshe Sefer Dibros Moshe. And it's the same moment in which, and we forget things when we have much smaller things to take care of. We have to take care of something in the Misrat HaPnim, and all of a sudden we forget about everything bad for our wives and children. So Rav Moshe had the world on his shoulders, yet at the same time, it was a priority of his. So Rav Moshe took Rav Reuven's socks and he put it on the radiator, either middle of the sugya, before he started the sugya. That's Ria. That's Ria's unconditional love. Rav Moshe's sons, both of them became Marbitzei Torah. They say that Rav Moshe barely pushed them in learning. Because Ria requires two basic things. Ria requires two basic things. Number one, the first thing is unconditional love. And the other piece is what was mentioned before, and that is modeling. And don't say that you're not Rav Moshe Feinstein. You're not. I'm not. But at the end of the day, the type of role model we could be for our children is no different. Absolutely no different. I repeat it again. Absolutely no different than the role model that Rav Moshe was to his sons. We are just as important to our children, and we are just as significant role model that Rav Moshe was to his children. And hafuch, the rabbanim who don't wear, I'm talking to some people in Mirtz Hashem who are going to wear rabbanim, the rabbanim who don't wear the fact that they're chashuv rabbanim when they're at home, those are the ones who are the best fathers. Rav Moshe didn't even project that. What did Rav Moshe project? Rav Moshe projected that he's thinking about their putting the socks on. The omek hadavar, which we're going to have to continue with, because it's now 10 o'clock. The omek hadavar is, because for every child, and this we need to really elaborate on, this comes from Noach Weinberg's etzal, for every child, their father and their mother are akin to the paragon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself. So it doesn't matter whether you're someone who washes the dishes in a restaurant or you're Moshe Feinstein. That power of unconditional love is exactly the same. The Baal Shem Tov would say to us, what are you talking about? It could very well be the fellow who's washing the dishes in the restaurant is in the same place in Gan Eden as Rav Moshe Feinstein. That's also a very, very powerful point. But Nehemiah, that you and I look at them as two different people. For their children, they're exactly the same. And therefore, the Zriya of being a role model, what type of role model they are, there's no difference. So we're going to have to elaborate in Mirtz Hashem more on what Rav Noach Weinberg is saying. So that brings us to the end of our first shiur. What is Tzinut? And about being loved like the sun. Rav Hashem will continue, I hope, this Yisrael next week. I very much would like, I don't have to rush. I have, I think, a pen and paper here. If there are issues, anybody who asks about, please don't stick around. I want to jot down if there are any issues that you would like me particularly to discuss. Obviously, I haven't gotten into anything halacha l'maisa. It's all been, are there any sugyas halacha l'maisa that you want me to discuss? I'm open to hear now. Anything, any thoughts that you have, anything that's important? As we go along, maybe you'll see what we need to get to. Absolutely. You show that there anything particular or that in general?
I know, you hear different like versions. They went from like hit your child to never say no.
Okay. By the way, I'll let the cat out of the bag. The piece that was taken out was something that part of what Revolvi had said about hitting that was no longer entirely politically correct. I'll give you my mahalas. We will discuss. We'll devote even a half of a shear to it, and we'll discuss. Discipline is absolutely extremely important. But what I'm driving at over here on the discipline piece, what I'm driving at is that the discipline is really not the most important piece. The discipline is there. I'm thinking about, I had to discipline my youngest son today. The discipline was just there to bring him, was actually a threat of a consequence. The discipline was there to bring him back to a place of Zriya. Bring him back to a place where we could, but there's no doubt in my mind that I wasn't doing chinuch at that particular time. You know, this Marshal Maldav Redoma is a famous Maharal. And Maharal says, I think I mentioned this once. I mentioned this in Shabbos, right? But the Maharal says that when you're speaking, you're not thinking. In other words, there are 15 people in the room now who are thinking, and there's one who's not. The one who's not is me. Hopefully I thought about what I'm going to say beforehand. But the Maharal says that when you're speaking, you're not thinking. So the same thing in regards to discipline. The discipline is bringing the child to a place that you're able to truly give them the chinuch. Every once in a while, discipline is the chinuch, but most of the time, discipline is. So once we have that perspective, then wait a second. The discipline is not the most important piece. For sure, knowing what's inappropriate to hit is for sure critical, because then that's, God forbid, abuse. But that's not the critical part. Even if one is doing the negative consequences correctly, and whatever one's shita is in regards to hitting a child, that's all being done correctly, it's still not chinuch. That's not the real chinuch. The real chinuch is the zriya that's putting you in that situation where they're able to grow organic. Or it's not the, maybe rephrase it, not as, maybe I said too sharp. It's not the most critical part of chinuch. It's not the most effective part of chinuch. Yeah?
Sheltering?
And what do you mean by that?
Sheltering, censoring the outside world.
Ah, okay. Filters. Right, okay, gotcha.
But also, I guess, sheltering
right.
from...
Right.
I meant it's... everybody talks about filters, though. Sheltering from outside influences and the balance.
Yeah, balance.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay, we should all have siyata d'shnayim, bezer Hashem. Again, the fact that you're here and thinking about it is the greatest skula.